Ladies and gentlemen, and fellow golfers, for your entertainment.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa, brought to you by Hagen Oaks, America's most awarded golf facility, and Naturewood Home Furnishings, where it's all about choices and always about quality.
You are listening to Sactown Sports 1140. This is the Golf to Go Radio Hour, back for another weekly hour show. Scott Marsh alongside me. I'm Frank LaRosa. We're gonna kick things off with Mr. Barney Adams. Now, anybody that's been around golf for a while will recognize the name, certainly from Adams Golf, if nothing else. He was the founder of Adams Golf. But Barney is he's just one of golf's great characters. I mean, he's an inventor. He's an entrepreneur. He invented the tight lies. He's a holder of several patents, and I have the opportunity to interview him during one of my People Who Play the Game segments. So I'm looking forward to what Barney has to say. You know, he's also a great proponent of playing it forward, of finding the right tee, which, you know, I've always suggested is something people ought to think about, not only just in terms of speeding up their round, but also in terms of enhancing the enjoyment of the game. When you're able to hit short irons into greens as opposed to long fairway woods that probably going to end up short right anyway, it always makes the game a whole lot more exciting.
You know, I can't disagree with that. And Barney's right, and you're right too. I have to say, for me, that's something I just completely resist. I always love to play from the back tees if I can. I'm sure it's just an ego thing, and it results in a worse score. And it's something I need to mature with, Frank, as a golfer, for sure.
Well, I think that it's somewhat a universal thought too, Scott. I wouldn't beat myself up about it, because it's something that you stand on the first tee and you're going to hear a lot of that. Now I'm going to play back here, and what's your handicap? Well, I'm a 22. you know you're in for a long day, and people should enjoy, I guess, the game, but you sort of have to be cognizant of all the other people that are on the course.
Yes.
And kind of make their day as well. But we'll get into that with Barney and kind of talk about the reasons why and so on and so forth. It's probably an age old subject that will continue to haunt people until the end of time. Which tee should I be playing?
That's a lot of fun. And of course, all your content, Frank, people can see on your YouTube channel as well, for people who play the game. So they'll be able to listen to the interview here with us, but they'll be able to see a lot more on your YouTube page as well.
Yeah, Golf to Go with Frank LaRosa at YouTube. And, you know, we've got David Faraday on there and Steve Young and Peter Jacobson. And, you know, now that I'm trying to think of over the top of my head, I can't think who they all are. G-Man is on there as well. So yeah, there's a lot of fun content there, and it's been fun putting those together over the years.
Yeah, no, it's a great subscription. Absolutely.
And it's a free subscription.
That's the best part about it.
Absolutely. So this is the Golf to Go Radio Hour. This is Sactown Sports 1140. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back with Mr. Barney Adams right after this.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa.
Welcome to another edition of the People Who Play the Game. I'm Frank LaRosa, very excited to welcome Mr. Barney Adams to the show today. Barney is anybody in golf knows Barney's name. He's an entrepreneur. He's the founder of Adams Golf, inventor of the tight lies fairway wood, holder of several patents for golf products, and what I like most about Barney is he's a proponent of growing the game and moving up a tee. I think those are two things that are going to help our game to continue to last. And so, Barney, thanks so much for being with us on People Who Play the Game. I appreciate you taking the time.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Let's go back to the beginning. How did Barney Adams get his start in golf?
I can't remember that far. There's a book I wrote called The Wow Factor. And the reason I wrote it is because to adequately answer that question takes too long, because it's not a normal path. It's fueled by passion for the game. And it's a very, adventurous at the very least, first few years. So I wrote a book about it, but the best story I could give you is back, I was about 12 or 13 years old, And I had a job at a local golf course as just the gopher kid to do whatever they wanted me to do. And this was before golf carts. And people would push their push carts up near the clubhouse basement where they were stored overnight. And my job was to put them inside, line them up so they were nice and neat, and clean the clubs. And I noticed in cleaning the clubs that the long irons were barely used. And I can remember thinking, what the hell if people pay money for these things if they don't use them? I guess that was the beginning.
That's remarkable that at that age, you know, you would notice that. But how true, right?
Yeah. I mean, and I guess that sort of indicates where my mind was, even though I might not have realized it. But I mean, I can remember it clearly to this day. So it certainly made an impact.
What was fascinating about the game to you at that young age? What did you see, or did you see yourself kind of staying involved in the game?
I knew I wanted to. I didn't know how. I certainly was not a good enough player. I was a decent player, but that wasn't going to be an avenue. And I liked the people associated with the game. I liked the atmosphere. I just felt comfortable there.
What did you do after school and before you got in the golf business? Let's kind of figure out what happened before you got involved there.
Yeah, it's kind of, I went to, very fortunate to get some financial help going to college. I played sports. And after which I went to work for Corning Glass for almost 10 years. And I left Corning. I finally got it through my thick head that, and I told them this too, that I was a lousy employee, that I just didn't fit at a big company because I wanted to run things. I just saw things I thought could be improved and so on and so forth. And you become a pain in the neck with that kind of an attitude. So I left Corning and I got a job in sales, selling equipment to supermarkets, shopping carts and shelving and so on and so forth. And I left that when they made me manager of my own territory and hired two guys to come in, basically because, frankly, because I made too much money. I was fortunate again, very successful, and it disrupted the company. So they didn't like that. So what I was doing, as I look back on it, was edging closer and closer to going on my own. And it's clearer now, but it wasn't so clear then. And then I ended up working in the Silicon Valley, working as a kind of a freelance troubleshooter for venture capital companies, going into small companies that they had purchased to work on particular problems that they noticed. And along the way, I got a call from the people that owned Dave Pell's Golf in Abilene, Texas, saying, hey, look, we really got some problems and Dave knows you and so on. Can you come to Abilene, Texas and take a look? And I did. And they offered me the job, and I ended up going from the San Francisco Bay Area to Abilene, Texas, where they had three universities, none of which allowed dancing. So you might say that was a cultural change.
Was that a deal killer for you?
No, I wasn't much of a socialite, but I always remembered that.
So that's how you got into golf, through Dave Pell's company.
Yeah, they were shutting down. Yeah. They were owned by guys in the oil business, and about that time, the oil prices had tanked badly, and they had serious financial issues. One of which was their financial obligations to Pell's Golf, which they could not meet. The bank foreclosed, so I got there just about the time the bank foreclosed, and we went from there.
So did you take over that company? Is that what happened?
Well, yeah, sort of. I mean, Pell's left. He had a guy down in Houston that wanted him to go start his short game schools. The business was dying. And after I got there, the bank was only interested in things we could do to raise money to pay them back. And we were out of things to do that. So I bought the remains. and which basically were the some desks and chairs in a building that was sitting in a field in outside of Abilene. And I had no plan. I had no anything except for this burning desire to be in the golf business. And again, I won't go into all the details, but it ended up eventually with me being going there full time. I will tell you another story because I think it's indicative. The PGA show, the company had gone to the PGA show for years, so it was on the invitation list. So after I bought it, we went to the PGA show. Now, for whatever we had, we were doing components mainly in those days. But going to the PGA show meant packing up a truck, driving it from Texas to Orlando, Florida, unloading it, setting up a booth, and standing there for 4 days with no activity whatsoever because nobody knew who the hell we were.
Right.
And I can remember I loved every minute of it. I loved being at the PGA show. I went back, reversed the process, reloaded the truck, drove it back to Abilene, Texas, got in a plane, flew back to Northern California to resume my time with the venture capital guys because I didn't have any income. And about 2 months after that, there was the show at the semiconductor show called the Semicon Show at the San Mateo County Fairgrounds. Same deal. So I helped our little company load up its products. We made equipment that tested semiconductors, centrifuges, et cetera, et cetera. And I thought, well, you know, I want to be a decent guy, even though I did this stuff was really over my head, to be honest with you. But I was going to stay there in the booth and help them, you know, be at least noticeable at this PGA show, or I mean, at this Semicon show. And I did. And I can remember to this day very clearly standing there and I'm thinking, geez, I'm getting hungry. I haven't eaten much. It's getting close to noon. I'm going to see if I can. There must be a food court around here someplace. And I looked at my watch and it was 10 minutes after 9 in the morning. And about half an hour later, the venture capitalist stopped by to say hello and I quit.
You're getting a little bored there, were you?
Well, it's you know, it was... Even if, you know, my thick head, the message was, Barney, you don't belong here.
Yeah.
This is not your world. You know, get out of here. You're not doing these people any good. So I left. Actually, I at their request, I searched around and found another small company that was it's adjacent to the process of testing the semiconductors. And they bought that and joined them together and made a little bit bigger operation out of it. But I left town.
So when did Adams Golf come to be? And how did that come to be?
Well, Adams Golf was, I was at Abilene in the late 80s. And I moved from Abilene to Dallas, Texas in 1990 or 91. I can't remember. And officially called the company Adams Golf. And I went out to north of Dallas to the Hank Haney Golf Ranch. Never been before. Never been Hank before. And he had this building there. And the one end of the building was basically empty. And I said, look, I'll come out here. I'll set up an operation. We can sell some golf equipment. It supplements what you're doing, you know, so on and so forth. And he said, all right. You know, so he was teaching. He was at the, I can see it in my mind's eye. He was at the right end of the range, and I'm talking about the left end of the range. Nice facility.
Yeah.
And I figured, well, this is great. I can sell some product here, except that I couldn't. I couldn't give the stuff away. And I mean, nobody knew who we were, and, you know, we were, it had no chance. And then I learned a very important lesson that, was reminded, I should say, of a very important lesson, and that is that you don't sell a product, you sell a service. And my service became custom fitting with the idea that as I custom fitted people, I could then use that to sell some of my own product and so on and so forth. And in fact, I did. So I was doing on the range custom fitting back in 1990, 91, but it wasn't being done.
Sure.
You know, but there were people in the industry that did it, that you know, some old timers and so on, but it just wasn't part of the industry. So like it is today, for example. And that was very good for me because I learned a lot. I you know, standing there watching the club hit the ball and watching where the ball went, and I used to take data. Actually, I used to try experiments. I used my customers in my experiments without telling them, you know, you'll like this a lot. It'll go a little to the left, and it was designed just the opposite, you know, and so on. But it was a very good set of data for me in designing a full set of clubs in that environment.
Yeah.
The one thing that became very clear was that the golfers struggled mightily with the long second shot off the ground, the fairway wood, as it were. And then watch it. And I had been to engineering school. So I mean, I looked at things a little bit differently. I looked at them more technically. And then looking at the results, it became very clear to me that my clubs were crappy designed. So I had to change. And I went to all the local retail stores around the Dallas area. I looked at all the major manufacturers to see what their, you know, staff of highly trained engineers and so on did. And their fairway woods are crappy too. I did, you know, what I knew that the club had to do to get the ball, what I used to call A&F, airborne and forward, they weren't well designed. So one night I went home, instead of going home, excuse me, I went back. We had a little bitty shop, Richardson, Texas, who did hands-on repairs and so on. And I sketched out on a piece of paper what I wanted the fairway wood to look like. And I remember, again, clearly as I did it, the name Tight Lies, I just wrote it at the bottom. I thought that would be a good name for it. Don't ask me how or why, it just happened.
Sure.
And I fortunately had some contacts in Asia that made clubs for other companies and so on. And I sent it to this one fellow that I knew, and I said, can you make me some of these? It was on a yellow pad that I tore off the top sheet and put it in a fax machine. And he responded to me. He said, this is kind of a strange looking club. Are you sure you want to do it? And I said, yeah. I said, you know, you see, I don't know if I'll take this forever, but I think that even today, custom fitting is backwards. I don't think it is that way because that's all you can do with the equipment. I understand. But in my mind, you made a golf club. You had a shot in mind and you work from there backwards into the club. You didn't design a club and then, you know, try and move that into the shot, so to speak. Yeah. So I had in my mind what I wanted the ball flight to be. And I had traced that back to a club design. And basically what I did is I took the ongoing fairway woods at the time and turned them upside down. To lower the center of gravity, that I added some other things and so on. He said, all right, if you want them, I'll make them for you. You know, so he did. And a couple of months later, a box came with some heads and they were to the request that I had made, shafted them up, took them to the range, hit them, and they hit great. And I can remember, again, paying attention to my customers that I could kind of hear the self-talk, you know, a weird looking thing here. Oh my, blah, blah, blah. But then they would hit it and they would go, wow, wow, that's pretty good. Wow, that's better than I could do. And that became what we called in our company, the wow factor, that we had to make product that produced a wow factor because that was one of the services that we were providing to consumers. So I thought at the time, great. Now I've really abetted my custom fitting operation and went on to something else. And then the phone started to ring. Holy God, I played with Frank the other day and he hit the shot at number four. He's not that good. I got to get one of these. And that led to a guy influencing me to try a infomercial, which I had never heard of. I didn't even know what an infomercial was. And I went on to become the most successful infomercial in the golf industry. And, you know, the rest, as they say, is history. We went from zero effectively sales to close to $100 million in sales in 3 years time, which you cannot do. I could write another book about, and I included it in my, some of it in my book about the difficulties, because you quickly move from product issues to people issues.
Sure.
And a very, very difficult environment. But I could say that those, everybody tells me how lucky I was for those 3 years and so on and so forth. And we were, I don't deny it, but boy, were they tough. They, that was just really difficult because people just, the pressure was unbelievable.
And you went on to continue to, you know, to refine golf clubs. Your, I remember your hybrids and your irons had, you know, your own touch to it too. And Adams became a brand that, that people understood because of that infomercial. That's a remarkable story.
We'll be back with more of my conversation with Barney Adams right after this.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa.
You're a proponent of people moving up, that, that we're all, you know, our egos get involved and we think we need to move back a tee and we want to, you know, we want to play with our friends and can't figure out why we, you know, can't get lower than a 19 handicap. And tell me, you know, how your thought process got to that and you know, how you feel about moving forward.
I was doing a favor for a guy. He was he's a well-known teacher out here in the desert, and he had a young man, a student, and he had a conflict. And he said, look, I need you to use up a couple hours of his time. Would you do it? And I said, yeah, we'll go play nine holes or something. And he was a typical young guy, hit the ball 400 yards off the tee, you know, and so on and so forth. So I thought as we went over to the golf course, I think I'll use him as an experiment. And we got to the very nice, accommodating guy. And we got there and I said, okay, I'm going to have you play like I do. I'm going to have you hit shots into the green for your skill level, which are tantamount to what I have to do at my skill level. He said, okay, what the heck, you know? And we did. And four holes later, he quit. He said, that's crazy. Nobody plays like this. This is not any fun. I said, really? I said, you look around this golf course. That's what we're all doing, most of us, every day. And he just shook his head. And that became what I called the, I called it the tee it forward movement. Or I didn't call it that. The PGA did. I called, I forget what I called it, but it was any, it was, if you look at a golf course and you stand on the green and look back, the designer has designed that green for a tip, for a certain type of shot to come into the green. Let's say, to make it easy, we're on the right side of the green and there's a deep bunker in front of the green and the pin's over there. You got to carry the bunker, right? So the designer has designed that hole so the ball is up in the air, lands on the green with spin, and gets to stop near the flag if he hits a really good golf shot. We don't do that. We're back so far that our ball isn't high. Our ball is more like a bullet if we hit it good. And we're hitting it to the left side of the green, which has got a small opening, and it's not going to stop. And if we hit our very best shot, it rolls over the green into God knows what's over there. And we don't play the hole the way the course designer had it in his mind in the first place. So that's what I wrote about, is let's take a look at the average length tee shot. I mean, I remember when I was a custom fitter, you know, how far do you hit your driver? Oh, you know, not maybe 240 if I hit it good. And they hit it 185. So, you know, we have to design the course and make it golfer friendly, so that if they hit one of their good or my good tee shots, whatever, they can hit a shot into the green the way the course is designed. That means you've got to move up. Just there's no other opportunity. And I'll be very honest. I don't think the golf industry has done a very good job of educating its consumers to that point. I got mad, but I thought the Golf Channel could have taken that concept and done a great job showing people why and how it works. And they never did anything. Of course, the Golf Channel doesn't play golf anymore, so that's a different world. But it's still out there to be improved on. I'll put it that way.
I would agree. I thought when the PGA came out with the Play It Forward, and you know, I mean, it only lasted a year, and I really was disappointed. I thought that it could have done so much to, you know, to help improve people's enjoyment of the game and help bring in new players as well.
Exactly. That's a whole nother subject is how the PGA does things. But they sent me around the country to give talks and so on the concept. And I did, and I tried. And you go to your average club pro, and frankly, too many of them could care less. You know, they just get them out on the golf course and life goes on, so to speak.
Tell me, you were inducted in the Texas Golf Hall of Fame. What was that like in your career?
When they told me, I thought, oh gosh, you know, I mean, I've had other awards and so on, and it was in San Antonio, Texas, and I had to tell my friends that was the right thing to do. So I told them, and I told them not to go to the ceremony. I said, you know, it's just more PGA stuff. Don't do it. I was kind of at a crossroads between not being a fan of some of the stuff the PGA does and not trying to denigrate their nice, you know, award for me and so on. So anyway, I went down there, and the people that put it on did a terrific job. There was a gal by the name of Katie Boehner, and I will always remember Katie because they came to my house and filmed me, and she was standing there, and they had me hit a fairway wood. They're doing the Ty Lai story, and she said, hey, let me try that. And she was there with her shoes on and stuff, you know, oh, this young, I guess maybe 40-ish, you know, very attractive young lady. And she took my tight lies club and hit it about 30 yards past me. And I just hit a good one. And it turned out she was a 2 handicap. I don't think I ever spoke to her again. I couldn't stand that. But they did a wonderful job. It was a lovely dinner. There were 6 of us that were inducted in at the time. And it was a nice affair. You know, it's a nice thing. And then you go home, and 2 days later, you're back to normal.
you've had a long career. What's the best piece of advice you ever got? Did I throw you with that one?
Yeah, sort of. Yeah, I mean, I did. My attitude is always forward. You know, what are we going to do next? We just can't sit on what we have. What are we going to do next? You just got to keep that. That's just me. I'm wacky anyway. And I would say, I don't know if it was a piece of advice between that idea and then what I would call the wow factor, making product that people say, wow, that's pretty good. Golf's a marketing business. I mean, come on. It's golf clubs today. Well, all, you know, the engineering department comes in and they got the new designs for 2023 or 2024 or whenever we're going to introduce them. And they go down to the marketing department and they say, well, here they are, you know, figure out some way to make them sound good. Because that's the same club they made 5 years ago. You know, it looks different and so on, but I'm sorry. it plays the same. And I'll get a message from somebody saying, well, you can't say that. Of course it doesn't play the same. You know, this new club does so and so. You find a player that whatever change you've made, let's say you want to hit the ball a little bit lower. So you find a player that hits the ball very high and you give him this club to test and he hits a little bit lower and he likes it. It's great. New product, you know, new stuff. You know, there's 17 of those guys. It's not a design that's applicable to the general public. So, I mean, we got back in 19, I don't know, early 90s. We got a document from the USGA on specifications for golf equipment. I read it and I can remember thinking, geez, we're, you know, these are the maximum things that are allowable. And I think we're already here. I mean, this is what I'm making now.
Yeah.
And so you could, the clubs that I play with are 10 years old. And I guarantee you they hit as well as, you know, I've had guys hit them. I say, here, get this. You got the new blah, blah iron. Try this. You know, here's a couple of 7 irons. Try them. They hit the same. So it's, as I said before, it's a marketing driven business. It's not a product driven business.
You talked about always coming up with something new. What's next?
Well, we've got putter shafts, wedge shafts, and a driver shaft, and we're working on iron shafts. We're going to, by a year or so from now, we'll be a little company that can supply a superior brand of shaft, technically superior, not marketing superior. And we've been able to do that so far.
Barney, you are amazing. Barney Adams, founder of Adams Golf, the inventor of the tight lies, and it just goes on and on and on because he can't sit still. Appreciate you taking the time to be with me today.
When I wrote the book, I included the line, there's a fine line between entrepreneurship and insanity. And I thought, well, that's okay. I'll accept that. I understand that. And then I found out that I remembered it because it had been written by somebody a long time ago. But that's the world of entrepreneurship.
Well, you've done it well. And we want to see you continue to do it and look forward to seeing what you come up with next. Barney Adams, thanks very much for being one of the people who play the game.
Thank you very much.
We'll be back with more right after this.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa.
You are listening to Sacktown Sports 1140. Hi, I'm Frank LaRosa with the Golf to Go Radio Show, along with Scott Marsh. And right now we're going to welcome in Mr. Brad Cady. Brad is the PGA Director of Operations for PRG Americas. Now, you've heard them, their commercials here on the radio station, and certainly during our radio show. And we want to kind of welcome them back as another new sponsor. Brad, how are you today?
Great. Thank you, Frank. I appreciate you having me.
Absolutely. You know, when I think about PRG Americas, all I think about the word that just comes to mind is quality. Just about every piece that you guys have anything to do with, you know, you put it in your hand and people go, wow, that's pretty good stuff. We're going to talk about everything you actually have to offer, but let's talk a little bit about Brad Cady. How does a PGA member, you know, who I know worked at golf courses, end up, director of operations for a company like this?
That's kind of a unique situation, I think. Well, maybe not as unique as you might think, but I was on the golf pro side my entire career. I worked my way up from working in a bag room, you know, at a club in Iowa as assistant pro at various places, and as a head pro at several places around the Sacramento area, most recently at Granite Bay Golf Club. And about 7 years ago, the two owners of PRG Americas, who were both members at Granite Bay, reached out to me as they were growing and needed some help with managing the operations. And it was just kind of the right fit at the right time. Wasn't necessarily looking to get out of the golf pro side of the business, but it was a good fit, and got into the, you know, different side of the golf business. I was familiar with the merchandise side, obviously, just working with various vendors on a daily basis as a head pro, but I was always buying from them, never on the selling side of it. So we talked a little bit over a couple months and ended up coming over to PRG as the director of operations, and it's been a great move. We've been here almost now 7 years in January, and we've grown tremendously over every year. You know, besides the COVID year, we've grown every year. So it's been a great ride.
You know, you think about the fact that you were at Granite Bay and you move over to PRG Americas. That's Granite Bay, certainly one of the premier country clubs here in town, and PRG Americas, as I talked a bit ago about the quality. So I think you're working for the right people, Brad.
Yeah, no, I mean, I definitely, you know, I think I've been lucky in the golf business that I've always been at places that quality and relationships / customer services has been a key element and a very important element. I think for myself personally, one of the aspects I enjoy about the golf business the most is the relationships, you know, meeting people like you, Frank, and getting to develop those relationships, whether they're customers or whether they're members or whether, you know, they're just other, you know, other people in the golf business. I've gotten the opportunity to meet so many different people, and with those relationships, you know, you get to experience a lot of great things. You know, I've been fortunate to be at the last couple of Ryder Cups, you know, working with PRG and working with a lot of great people from the PGA and various organizations that you only can happen in the golf business, I think. And that's one of the things I think I appreciate about the golf business the most. It is a very relationship driven industry.
The company has kind of a fairy tale story to it. I mean, it was a mother and a son, if I'm getting this correctly, that decided we need to start this business and do some quality stuff. And lo and behold, here we are. I don't know how many years later, but this was all started in Ireland, and now here we are in United States, and you know, you're rep their products as well. Tell me the story about the mother and son and how that came to be.
Yeah, well, Steve Riley is the founder of the brand. Him and his mom, they founded it. She was a longtime, I believe, Titleist rep in the UK, and he was a golf pro himself, and he recognized that there wasn't, there was a quality accessories lacking as far as the assortment available to them, and quality ones to be in particular. I mean, you could find, you know, cheap stuff, but it was just trying to find good quality stuff at you know, reasonable prices at the same time. So they put together the company. Steve went over to China and found sourcing himself, and, you know, eventually he got his own factories to do it. So it has complete control over all the production and quality. And that's one of the big keys that we have. I mean, there's lots of companies that just source things and you don't really have a lot of control over the manufacturing process, where that's a little bit different for us, that we actually have, you know, firsthand control over that. So Steve founded the brand in 2006, and it's grown, you know, every year since. There's distributors all over the world. We're the distributor for the United States, Mexico, and Caribbean. And we started in the U.S. in 2011. PRG, it actually happened when our two owners, John and Trevor, were over in Ireland on a golf trip and saw a PRG product in one of the shops. It happened to be at Royal County Down, one of the, you know, top courses in the world. And brought it back over and spoke to actually my buyer at the time. You know her very well, Heather at Hagen. Spoke to her at Granite Bay and said, "Hey, do you think this is a product that we can do and sell?" And she, you know, said, you know, yes, very, very definitely. And got the relationship going with Steve and brought the product to the U.S. And now we've expanded and grown, and we're in pretty much every top shop in the entire country and doing very well. So
I think the notion that all of the top shops in the country are carrying your product, or certainly most of them, as you say, you know, speaks to the piece of advice that I thought was really interesting early on when the company was being started. Someone gave them a piece of advice to focus on clean, high quality products, and that's kind of a nice little description of everything that you have to offer. You have ball markers and head covers, and you have Arnold Palmer stuff and Major League Baseball stuff. Why don't you kind of take us through the line and tell us what you're most proud of?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, first example I would mention is exactly the things that we did for you, Frank. Was, you know, our duo mark is probably our number one item. We do, you know, tons and tons of those. They're a great high quality. They're a ball mark. They're just not just a simple ball mark. They're a two piece, have some weight to it, and have some great customization ability to them to showcase logos and events and, you know, different things. So that definitely is one of our highlights. We do a ton of head covers, wood covers, and putter covers. Those are, those two pack categories are probably our two biggest, but obviously we have, we're kind of a one-stop shop for accessories. We can do towels, tote bags, bag tags, divot tools, umbrellas, keychains. You know, we even have leather where we can do wallets and luggage and, I don't know. I mean, it's almost endless in the number of possibilities that we can do. We even do teddy bears where people bring those in for, you know, holidays and stuff like that. So, you know, there's a lot of possibilities that we can do. And, you know, the great thing is there's lots of style options within each one of those categories. There's lots of color options. So, you know, we can make, you know, unique things for every different customer.
You spoke to the ball marks that PRG Americas did for the Golf to Go radio show. And I know, Scott, you've mentioned so many times when you hand someone one of those ball markers, you love looking it in their eyes when the reaction you get.
Well, they're not just ball markers, they're keepsakes, right? They're things that you want to have, and it's part of your collectible item. So it's just a much larger scale than just simply having a small ball marker. And that's kind of everything that you do, Brad. So thank you for what you did for the show, because that's fantastic, number one. I'm curious, just a couple of questions here to clarify, because our listeners, they're in full Christmas mode right now. So What I'm wondering is, for listeners out there who are looking for high quality golf gifts for their family members or perhaps their friends, things like that, and they want to access something that you're purchasing, is it best just to go to one of the golf shops like a Hagen Oaks in the area, or is it best to go online? How would they access something for Christmas?
Both ways. So if they're looking for something particular from with that golf course's logo, they would need to go to that shop. Only that course can sell their logo. So we'll produce for that course, and then they'll sell, you know, their logoed item. So so if that's what they're looking for, they do need to go to that particular golf shop. But in general, you know, if they're looking for some, we have options that are generic, which we call our originals. We also have a bunch of different licensing options. And before I get into those, they are all at our website, and they can be purchased directly by the consumer. No minimum order on those items. You can order ones. But our website is prg-golf.com, and if you just go to the shop page on there. But we have college licensing, we have MLB licensing, we have Arnold Palmer, Folds of Honor. There's some various PGA/Ryder Cup and USGA licensed items. There's some, again, there's our originals and some, you know, some unique, you know, limited edition kind of designs on there. So there's lots of different options that people can purchase directly on our website. And we get them shipped right out from our office here in Rockland. And for those in Northern California, they would have them within a day or two. So.
Wow, that's incredible. Within a day or two, that's Amazon-like right there. That's great efficiency.
Yeah, we're able to get them generally out, depending when we get the order, shipped the same day or the next day. And shipping times in Northern California from here are usually a day or two at most. So
that's fantastic. The other question I had for people who are in the golf tournament business and looking at larger purchases like that, and they're planning out for 2023 and looking to do something in the golf world, and maybe something similar to like what we did in terms of like getting ball markers for the show, planning out what's the best process to work on that? Are they going directly through the website again, or are they going to their local course, or what's the best way for them to plan out for next year?
You know, both ways are definitely an option. They can definitely, there's an inquiry section on our website. They can submit an inquiry and send that. They could email me directly, and I'm fine sharing my email. It's brad@prgamericas.com, and that we can direct you here in our office to the right, either account manager or course. If they're having their event at a course, I would recommend, you know, first going to that course and letting them know, hey, we're looking at doing some, you know, some PRG accessories. If they if they're a court customer of ours, we would suggest going through the course, and they can get it all handled for them. But you know, if they're not going to a course that we work with, or it's not for an event at a course, we can work directly with that corporate customer as well.
Brad, you mentioned the Major League Baseball connection and your head covers and things like that, and I know you're very proud of those. When I was out there last week, you opened some boxes and showed me some of that stuff. And I have to say, as a lifelong Red Sox fan, I really love the New York Yankees head cover with the pinstripe. but you know, I felt like a kid, you know, when you were pulling those out and showing me the different teams and everything. It was, you know, I'm thinking back to my baseball cards and the spokes of my bike and all that stuff. It really is high quality stuff, but it's fun. You know, you have a relationship with whatever team you've had for years, and now you can proudly display it in your golf bag as well.
Frank, I have to cut you off because I'm cringing to think about all the lost money you have with all those baseball cards that you ruined in your bike spokes. Over the years. I just don't even want to know what that could have added up to right now for you.
Yeah, he wouldn't be doing radio right now.
That's right.
But just to comment on your comment, Frank, I mean, the one of the things that we saw as an opportunity with bringing on Major League Baseball licensed product is, you know, there's a lot of licensed, whether it's baseball or football or, you know, any of the major sports of, you know, golf products out there. But where we saw an opportunity is there's not really a high quality product out there that is for the discerning golfer. Most of the ones that you see out there are kind of like, hey, it's the, you know, the wife wanting to buy something for the husband for Father's Day or something, and not really have any idea of what they really want or the quality they're looking for. Our goal was to get product that, you know, the discerning golfer really wants and really wants to put on their bag, and it's going to stay on their bag. And that's why we got the licenses and why we designed them the way we did. And they're still reasonable price points. It's not like they're, you know, $100 each head covers either, you know, so, you know, they're still reasonably priced and they're really high quality and they have great looks to them. We tried to pattern a lot of them off the jerseys that the teams wear. So like Frank mentioned, the Yankees ones, Cubs, White Sox, Phillies, I'm sure I'm missing one. They all have pinstripes to match their pinstripe uniforms. And so we, you know, really tried to match up. When, of course, we have Giants and a couple different Giants ones for all those Giants fans around here. But yeah, there's lots of options on there.
Everything you do is high quality, Brad. Appreciate your relationship with the Golf to Go Radio Hour. And, you know, as Scott said, we're very proud to hand out the ball marks and know that people are using them and enjoying them. So,
prg-golf.com.
I knew I could get it out. Brad Cady, PGA Director of Operations, PRG Americas. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, Scott, that wraps up another edition of the Golf to Go Radio Hour. What great guest today, Barney Adams. He is certainly one of the characters and one of the movers and shakers in the world of golf over the years he's been involved.
No question about that. And what's great, Frank, is that not only can they hear it here, but of course they can see it on your YouTube with all the content that you have there with the Golf to Go segments, what you're doing with players in the game.
Yeah, it's a fun segment. And thanks also to Brad Cady from PRG Americas. And I think that, as you suggested, it's a good thought for Christmas gifts. So we hope it's a great holiday season for everybody.
Well, you know, two things about me, Frank. One, I love the shop, and two, I love Christmas. So Brad's going to be seeing me online a lot in the next few weeks.
I'll have to get my list to you pretty soon.
Do it soon before that credit card burns up.
Thanks for joining us for another edition of the Golf to Go Radio Hour. Back next week with more golf talk here on Sactown Sports 1140 KHTK.